Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. The death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Once again, for coming into Bard's Logic, Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And if you are a Facebook user, you can find the Patriot Journalist Network simply just by going to the search engine and just put in Patriot Journalist Network as one word into there, and you will find not only this show, but you will see Mark Prasik's Full Armor show there as well, which runs from 8 p.m. till midnight, Monday through Friday, Eastern Time. Stop on in. It's a great show. It's a live video and audio chat. Of course, you do not have to have either the mic or the video because they do have just a regular chat aspect to it. And if you stop by, tell Mark that I have said hello because I haven't had the opportunity to do that much myself. So if someone could do that for me, that would really be appreciated. And so I'd like to thank the folks tonight who are listening to the show either by the live through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website or through Blog Talk Radio itself or through other ways of listening to the show as well as the archives. Now tonight we have a special guest come on, and that is John Finnegan, and he will talk about tonight about his efforts for Ron Paul and getting him on the ballot in California. We also discuss and analyze the upcoming election, which is a mere 5 days away. And so without further ado, I will bring in one of the Bard's Logic political panelists that we all know well, and that is Chris. And I believe, hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
Great. And I also believe we have our guest on the line, so I will open up his mic. John, is that you? If so, welcome.
It certainly is. Hi, Robert. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
Thank you for coming on.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. There is some housekeeping, though, I got to bring up.
Sure.
Technically speaking, Ron Paul is not on the ballot. He's classified as a certified write-in candidate.
Right.
So that's one. So he's not going to be visible on a physical ballot. His name won't be there. But that's where you guys come in and talk with people, and that's where we come in, getting the word out that he is a viable candidate and a write-in vote will be counted. So that's the thing we're going to be looking at. The second bit of housekeeping is I like the blurb, but without any false modesty, I was not the one who got him on there. There was a group of people that really busted butt and really got it done in a very short span of time. So those are the people that really deserve the credit.
Okay.
Let's get them all on here at the same time.
No, I like to do
that.
That'd
be great.
55 people plus John and the two of us. That would be a wild one.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
It would
The fun part was there was a considerable number of people who were contacted and really took it to the task to say that we're going to get it done. There is one person there's two people that are really outstanding. One is a lady by the name of Lori Drake. She was the one that did all the heavy groundwork for collecting names and the delegates during the campaign in California. So she had a solution that she was trying to find somebody who would implement, and I was the fortunate one. The other person is another lady by the name of Erica Chara, who is a mother of three and took it upon herself to have a declaration signing party where she hired a notary public to come to the house, invited people over. They all sat there and they just signed all the declarations to become electors. And then she packed her family up with three kids and her husband, and they drove an hour and a half into Sacramento through the one time we had some serious rain and sleet, snow, and hail to hand deliver them in Sacramento. So, yeah, there were some people that really put that extra effort out there.
Well, I will have to make a note of that for the archives.
Oh yeah, because they saw there was a possibility. I think that was the thing that was most interesting to me, because I was never a joiner of the movement, so to speak, for Ron Paul. I'm an outlier. I'm the type of person that will sit out there and watch, take note, and really look at the candidate. And when I decided to do this, I said, okay, that's the candidate I want to support, and that was pretty much it. But, no, there's all these other people actually did the groundwork and allowed me to coordinate some things, and that's about it.
Well, great. So how many ballots, or write-in ballots, well, both, rather, is Ron Paul on?
That I'm not aware of. I'm not really sure because, as I've mentioned to Chris a couple of times, I'm the kind of guy who does not multitask. I set a goal of a specific deadline, and that deadline for me is November 7th. So until I reach November 7th, I'm not cognizant even of what's around me regarding other states. I know that Maine is one of them. We talked before. Yeah,
I
we talked before. That'd be great, Chris, because Maine has the same situation that we in California have, whereby the electors are who's being voted on. And the presidential candidate's name is really just like a team name, identifies the 55 people that are going to be voting for them in December when the Electoral College gets together to vote for president.
Interesting. And has anyone had an opportunity to talk with Dr. Paul about what he thinks about being a presidential candidate, even if it's just write-in, on ballots, you know, such as either whether it's write-in or actually on the ballot as he is in Maine?
He made a comment in a speech in Texas just recently, back in the early part of October, or the middle of October, whereby he pretty much said what he's always said, is that he neither discourage it nor encourages it, but it's a valid option for voicing personal involvement in the process of being governed. So, and that's pretty much his stance as he stated. And I go with that, no problem whatsoever. It's the type of thing where you sit there and say, do I want a campaigner for president or a reluctant president who has the capabilities of exercising the powers? That's what one of the things I look at. So what he says, he's not been contacted. I have not contacted him other than sending him a little email saying this is what we did, and that's it. Enjoy your time because you did all the heavy lifting. We just put your name on the write-in ballot. Now it's official and people's vote can be counted.
I have a
go ahead, Chris.
Well, I'm kind of gonna lead you into some questions also that I know the answers to, but I think people need to hear it from somebody who's part of the you know, the California thing. But how many rallies did he do down there, and how many people did he pull in those rallies?
Well, the most recent ones that I keyed off of were in the month of April and May, and in that 30-day period, he had six rallies and averaged about 6,000 people at each rally. The total, I think, came to about 37,000 people in that 30-day period that saw him at his rallies. So there was a lot of excitement and a lot of energy generated for the campaign. My concern was when the campaign was suspended, the youth of the rallies came out of the people in the sense that they weren't prepared for it being over so quickly. And so they kind of went to a funk and it all went by the wayside. But, yeah, there was a lot of rallies and a lot of energy generated.
I know that you're not really, you know, keyed into the campaign. You're an outlier, and you and let me give people a little bit of background. You know Kelly Mordecai, and that's who hooked you and I up, and that's how we've only been talking for what, a week and a half,
something like that. Well, we've had for only a week and a half.
Yeah. Well, and that's how we got hooked up, was through Kelly, and I think that was because Kelly's one of the electors, correct?
That I don't know. I don't have that list in front of me. You got me caught on that.
Well,
I think
that's what he told me. That's how we got that on the phone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a kick. Well, I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, because this whole thing, and this is I'll give you a quick timeline because it's real important to know, have people know that time is of the essence, but it's not necessarily an issue. The commitment is the issue. Are you committed to something? Because all the required work necessary to get this done was done in less than 72 hours. Now, in that 72 hours, more than 300 or 400 phone calls were made, and at least 200 people were talked to face-to-face or on the phone one-on-one, but there were people contacts. Now, when we finally started getting the declarations processed, through our system, we started calling at 2 o'clock on Saturday, on Sunday the 14th. By 11 o'clock on the 17th, all the thing had been done. Now, I can say that in retrospect. We don't think about that during the process. We just look back and say that's when the work was done, which is why we always focus on that, focus on the work and not start counting the beans to see if we're actually getting anything done. So
right.
The declarations were in the mail. The physical declarations were in the mail on the 17th. Then we said, okay, the overnight on the 18th, the FedEx is on the 19th, the hand deliveries and faxes were on the 22nd and 23rd. So that buildup is what made it all work, but the work and the grunt work was all done the first 72 to 96 hours. And so when people asked me, how well are you doing, I said, we've got two in there. Because on the 14th, we had two electors on file with the Secretary of State's office. That was mine and my wife's. By the 18th, by the 23rd, we had in excess of 55. And their comment was they stopped counting and verifying the electors' declarations for electors after the 55, and they just left the other wave, as they put it, alone. So that
you know what's interesting to me in this whole process, and you and I have talked quite a bit, in fact, a couple times today, but what's interesting to me is how few people it takes to really get something done. And I wonder, you know, because I remember when Maine was posted as a registered write-in, you know, a legitimate write-in mm-hmm. state for Ron Paul. And I remember jumping on the Ron Paul sites going, can somebody tell me how that happened? Because I knew that the campaign was not going to cross that line with the FCC or with the Republican Party. So
right.
I was like, well, how did that happen? Because I've done a ton of research. I know which states are you know legitimate write-in states, which states you have to do some kind of process, you know which sort of, you know we've already done all that work. And so Maine kind of caught me off guard. And then when you and I talked the first time, you know I was like, that's it. It just took like some people and a certification and 72 hours and. He's on a ballot, and you know, here's the part that gets me about this, and it's something that I want to finish the research on, But I wonder how many more states, if somebody would have got up and done what you did, and the people, you know, not to discredit the people that were involved, but, you know, did what you guys did, how many more states would he have been available on? You know,
that's an interesting question. Yeah, that's an interesting question because in the process of doing this, a lot of this was education. People hear about the Electoral College all the time and the big conflict between popular vote versus Electoral College vote.
Right.
Well,
right, right.
The system is we work with the Electoral College, and it's based on population of state. So when someone becomes an elector, they don't understand what that really means. And as a result, it said, well, it can't be done because I was not not elected for the Republican Party. Well, each party has a different criteria by which you become a presidential elector. When a write-in on the
each
general
party
election,
or each state? Each party or each state or both?
In California.
Okay.
Interesting.
In California, each party has a different criteria. In fact, it's actually listed in the election code. They stipulate the different methods by which they will appoint, elect, or announce the electors and those representing those parties. It's really fascinating. That's why people got real confused about, no, he can't go on because he didn't declare himself a write-in candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's part of the primary function and not the general election function. So there's a lot of confusion in the election code, at least in California, that if it's anything like the California codes in other states, I can see why there's be confusion. Yet, if someone does get into that minutia, they'll find out, as we did, and as I finally got people to understand, our electors, the whole process consisted of nothing more and nothing less than putting your name, your address, and signing an oath of office and put it in the mail. It doesn't cost anything except postage. And that was it, and the notary public. So that was it. Name and address and the signature. And that's all it took. But the educational process.
That's almost freaky.
Oh, it is. And that's why whenever I post certain things, most of the process, and this is the sad part, though, most of the election process is very, very simple. It is convoluted for the purposes of confusion, but it's deceptively simple. And people get distracted by the election code speak, and as opposed to saying, what does this really mean? And then they see, oh, it's clear as day. All I got to do is act. And that's...
I wonder if the hard part is to get enough people to act.
Yes, that's the essence right there, Robert, is that the knowledge... Everything was in place, and that's why I sometimes say, you know, well, I really didn't do anything other than the fact that all the work was there, but the mindset was no longer there. And I really give these people credit because the people who did act were the people who were really in the deepest funk as a result of the suspending of the campaign. I didn't even know that. I didn't know why it all went away until I started talking to these people. And for one reason or another, they were all ambivalent about where they stood regarding politics. So
mm-hmm.
when I offered them this, they became re-energized. And that I give them credit for because that's a major step for any individual who's been disillusioned to regain
right.
that vision.
Yeah. Well, you know, in our research that we've done, you know, Gary Johnson in the Libertarian Party was preparing for a Ron Paul defeat because he didn't lose. He got defeated by crime and corruption
yeah.
and coercion. And I know that the Johnson, you know, the whole Johnson Libertarian campaign was geared and prepping, you know, to cast a large net across the Ron Paul supporters. I think that what happened, and you and I have seen, you know, anybody's been on the Ron Paul sites, you know, especially the main ones where the better, I don't want to say better, that's a bad word, but some of the more mature, dedicated people are, you know, versus the fringe rah-rah sites. But
mm-hmm.
I watched a little war going on there, and I think Gary Johnson realized that he was not going to capture all the Ron Paul people.
I've seen studies
that's
where one guy did
left.
a large study, 35,000 people that he polled, and only 66% of them moved to the Libertarian Party. There's a lot of conservative, socially conservative Ron Paul people who will not move to the Libertarian Party because of its
right.
social positions.
Mm-hmm.
And the Constitution Party picked up some, and then you have the dedicated, well, I'm going to vote for Ron Paul, the RNC screwed us, and I'm going to vote for Ron Paul, and I don't give a damn if my vote doesn't count, you know, protest. And in that dynamics, there is where the whole concept of can we actually, you know, you have the write-in Ron Paul with the affidavit, you had the, you know, the Gilbert lawsuit, and even though there's some fractions there, there's still, both of them have a valid point. You know, write-in Ron Paul with the affidavit is to actually, because you come from, you know, wag the dog and, you know, the election fraud people, you know, they want actually to be able to have casework, you know, coming out of it to prove fraud. So they have a specific thing they're trying to accomplish. Gilbert's efforts got him involved with the state attorney generals and or the secretary of state to actually, because they found out, and I learned this, you know, through the process with these people following it. There was a lot of write-in states that, yeah, you can write in all you want, but we ain't counting it.
Yeah,
and that's where Richard Gilbert, you know, that's where Richard Gilbert got involved, because he's going like, we want to make sure that we get them to count it. And so the list of states that I have are the states where I have followed that lawsuit process and brought that information together on states where you know that your write-in will, you know, actually be counted and recorded versus just thrown in the garbage. I mean, it is
exactly.
It's an amazing thing that's going on right now.
Well, I think it's a lot. It's a really what you were saying is probably the greatest example of how broad Ron Paul's support really was and is.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have a coalition of ideologies that when that that glue, so to speak, is gone, they spread to at least four or five different views, then you say, oh, he really did have a broader draw, so to speak, than people gave him credit for. He really did coalesce a lot more different mindsets than people gave him credit for. And that's only within his group, meaning the Ron Paul movement. That doesn't even take consideration the following he has with disenfranchised Republicans, disillusioned Democrats, because they were all for Obama, but not now. And then you have the confused, frustrated independents. And I was talking to one physician just yesterday. He's been bouncing between Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and writing Ron Paul, and now not even voting, because now he's overwhelmed of where do I go? And that's where I started bringing in the main focus of the write-in campaign for Ron Paul is to create a coalition, because in California, the majority of registered voters are Democrats. There's 43%, according to the Secretary of State's office, 43% of all registered voters are Democrats. The Republicans come in about 30%, and the non-stated party or non-affiliated party is about 20%, and then the others, meaning minority parties, are now 5%. Well, at no point can any one of those separate entities get anything done on a national level. It just isn't going to happen. They don't have the votes. So from the get-go, they didn't even have the registered votes. So my whole focus is, if people would look at the fact that a coalition of those three areas for the sole purpose of getting Ron Paul on the ballot, I mean, to get him in the 55 delegates, electors, then that's going to benefit a lot of people. And the main thing that I'm going to look at is that it benefits Ron Paul because it gets him the 55 electors, which is actually 10% of the total number of votes in the Electoral College. The Electoral College got 538 votes. So that's
right.
10%.
Wow.
Then you've got the situation where now that those 55 are taken off the table for Obama. That immediately drops him down because everybody thinks he's got California. So in my mind, California is a battle state in as much as Ohio or any of the other ones there. Because
Virginia.
That's huge. Yeah, like you said, Virginia. So, that's my whole focus, is to draw that coalition to recognize the importance, because everybody can benefit, whether it's the Republican Party can now have some potency to it, because right now the Republican Party in California is impotent. They got nothing going on.
Well, same as up here in Washington.
Yeah, and so if they want to say we helped Romney, they've got to vote for someone who's going to take away the 55 votes from Obama, and that's Ron Paul. By the same token, any minority party in California, and I always have to say that because I'm in California and that's my focus, but in California, if the minority parties would say, okay, we want to have a position on the national stage, what better way to do that than to take what they keep saying is passing the torch from Ron Paul to any other candidate and say, this is what he's going to hand you, 55 electors. Hello? Then you can say, if we get together, everybody's going to win. Romney gets to have it off of Obama's. Ron Paul wins the state and moves the movement forward. And then, as a legacy, any minority party can stand on the fact that now there's an awareness great enough for the greatest state of the Electoral College. So that's where everybody wins, if they just create that. Now, will they? That will take a maturity that I don't know if it's there or not in the political sense, because that's strictly strategy, and that's where I'm coming from, is the strategy of winning.
Right.
And
we've talked about that, right?
Yeah. Just moving to the desired goal, which is to raise the level of awareness for minority parties and to get Obama out of office.
Well, you know,
real quick, Chris, it's one of the strategies, yes, is to stop 270. No, I know the interest that you have, or at least it sounds, correct me if I'm wrong, is, as you said, to stop Obama from getting 270. But for myself, I would not only like to see Obama not get 270, I would like to see Romney not get 270. And I think if that was to happen, you would really create an awareness for third parties. And then the vote would go to the House, and that would be something that would be dynamic, not only, of course, historically interesting to see, fascinating, as it were, but also I think that it would really wake up America to the possibility of third parties. Now, of course, the House, it could be up to the House of Representatives, and it could be Romney anyway. However,
exactly, yeah.
If you could stop, but if you have a lot, you know, if you do indeed have a lot of conservatives in the House, then perhaps the conservatives would finally, you know, snub their noses up to the moderates and the liberals in the Republican Party and snub their nose to them and say, you know what, you guys pretty much, in my opinion at least, you know, stole or through chicanery got, you know, a moderate, if at best, to a liberal like Romney to get the nomination. But you know what, now it's up to us to, you know, pretty much pick who the president's going to be, and perhaps they would pick someone of a more conservative stance, or maybe even libertarian stance, than Mitt Romney.
Yeah, that's a real toss-up there as far as, again, banking on what it is that some future act is going to implement, which is one of the things I kind of don't give myself the luxury of thinking about at this particular point, because I compress everything into 5 days, and that my life is actually that many, I forget how many hours it is now, but 120 hours. That's all I live by, is 120 hours, and every hour that passes that I don't get what I need, I keep pushing harder. So the outcome from beyond California, though, that's the thing. My main thing is to get the 55 votes away from Obama. Then, if Maine picks up, or if Texas isn't going to have a write-in, and they aren't going to go for Obama, I know that. But if other states start to say, well, maybe if, because of this activity in California, that's the catalyst.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I would much rather have California be the catalyst for Maine getting their 4 and us not getting 55 than not doing anything and hope Maine gets their 4. So, mm-hmm. you know, I Again, my main focus is just those 3 points. This has everybody coalesce, and it can all work. And it's not pie in the sky either. I mean, that's like I was telling Chris. That's the whole point behind this. We have a way to do it because we proved we could do it in 96 hours. The manpower, the intelligence, the effort is all there. The energy level is there. The organization for the Ron Paul organization is there to capitalize on people who say, let's do this. And that's the whole secret. I went to browsing through. I did a search of Romney sites. There's maybe 7 Romney sites in California with a totality of about maybe 200 likes.
Yeah. You're kidding me.
I am not kidding. Go ahead. You can do that. And I was really surprised.
You're talking about Facebook.
I'm talking about Facebook. I'm surprised because when I started this thing, not really being familiar with Facebook, I had at least 59 sites for Ron Paul. And those 59 sites, incidentally, I only picked those sites that had over 1,000 likes to them. I didn't try to put up any information on any site of Ron Paul's less than 1,000, and I still had 59 starting
wow.
out. I know. It's really amazing. And this has all been an education for me on Facebook. That's what Chris, you've been really good helping with that just in the last day.
Yeah, I know more than I want to know now, trust me.
Yeah. But yeah, this is
you know what
this
is amazing been, to me? Have you ever met anybody who likes Romney? I haven't.
No, I haven't either.
I met people who argue for him, who tell us we got to vote for him, who tell us that he's better than Obama, who tell us all kinds of crap, but I've never anybody had anybody tell me I like Romney.
No, and that's the thing. I've had more people say they'd like to go out and have a beer or shoot golf with Obama because he seemed like a nice guy, and he might be. By the same token, I'm not like you said. I have not heard anybody say I really would like to sit around and just kind of hang out with Mitt.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
Even on that point, more people would like to hang out with George W. or Barack as people than they would with Mitt. I mean, that says a lot about the individual and his connectivity with the people who are going to vote for him.
Right. Well, and one of the things when I started researching Ron Paul, when I first said, that's it, I'm tired of all the rhetoric, I'm going to go find out who this man is, and I started listening to the man speak on videos, you know, and things like that, and I went, wow, he's just a really nice guy. That's what I got, you know, that he was just a real genuine, nice guy. He wasn't trying to impress anybody. I always got this impression, you know, he's the reluctant politician. I don't think he really
right.
wants to be a politician. And I have respect for that because it's somebody who serves, you know, we were talking about this earlier. You know, when I get up every morning, I get up going, I'm done doing this crap. It's just, it's
yeah.
it's work and it's frustrating and people are messy and, you know, but I know I'm doing the right thing because I don't really want to do it. I just know it's the right thing. So I get up and somehow through the day, you know, I boot up and start my computer and start reading posts and start answering things and get geared into it. And then once I'm geared up, I'm good. But I have to convince myself to do this every day because I don't want to do it. But somebody's got to do it for some stupid reason. You know, in our research, we learn some things. And so we become a message board, you know, for that information. You know, I'm sick of the corruption.
Right.
I'm sick of the lies. I'm sick of making excuses for corrupt Republicans. You know, I'm tired of it. And I don't know where else do I go? You know, I could never vote for a Democrat, you know? I mean, their whole ideology is contrary to everything I believe. And so it's a matter of, like, that's why I started doing third-party research. I'm going, like, shoot, I got to figure something out. You know, Ron Paul's retiring. All my favorite people got wasted along the journey, and the Tea Party's been corrupted. You know, what the hell am I going to do with the rest of my life in terms of politics? That's what led me down this pathway to third-party research, is I need to go find some people. Give a crap.
It's okay.
Give a crap about the Constitution
just
and the country. You know what I mean?
It's
the Constitution.
Yeah.
Stupid. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what my
you
mother
go,
told me, and she was. I'm sorry, Robert. What?
I said, go, Chris.
Oh, okay.
He's going.
Chris, I was going to say, what my mother taught me, and she was the one who was really my instructor in when it comes to politics, was that she never influenced my political views, but what she taught me was you look to the man and his principles, because in Texas I was always taught a man's word is his bond. So therefore, if a person is going to shake your hand, look you in the eye, and say, I'm going to do it, you expect him to do it. And
yeah.
So we look
old
at the man.
Old school. Old school.
Exactly. And then you said, okay, once you find out what the man's beliefs are, and it's really easy to do, just put him in a crisis situation and you'll see the real character of the individual come out. Then you look to see where he got his belief structure. Who advises this guy on his decision making? Because no one person knows everything. So if I have a question, I might come. For example, I come to you, Chris, for a Facebook issue. You're one of my advisors for my actions from that point on. Well, then you look at where does he get his money? If his money comes from business dealing, and business dealings involve doing business with other people, which means how he gets his money is how he treats people. So all these very subtle things that go into the analysis of a candidate, all it takes place before the word party ever comes into it. And at one point, it was always a great joke because everybody in Texas is in politics, but not everybody is a Republican, but they'll vote Republicans. In fact, at that time, my mother was in the Texas Democrats for Nixon. So, I mean, these are things that are taught from the ground up, from the time you can form connected sentences. And as a result, when I looked at Ron Paul and I looked at the other candidates, I finally reached that same point, Chris, that you talked about. I said, enough is enough. I am going to stand my principles. I will vote for Ron Paul. And, of course, you know, but I'm not going to get involved with all the rah-rah because I'm too old for that. That's just crazy time. So I said, this is great. I don't see it. I don't understand it. Because, again, politics to me has never been that rock star type of thing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Never hero worship, no. Because, again, when you look at a man and you say, what are you, it's not a matter of hero. It's what substance do you provide, what value do you bring to the relationship that we're about to have?
And speaking of that, there's an article I'm going to read off of, not now, but later on in the show, because you mentioned hero worship. And that's one of the things that is talked about in the article that I'd like to get to at some point. It's from the Daily Paul, www.dailypaul. So, but go ahead, John.
Oh, go ahead, read it. That's a good place.
I want to add two things to your list. Two other things tell me who a man is. I want to know who his enemies are. That's really important to me because – and I want to know, and typically whenever a politician beats on my door, you know, walking around doing their thing, trying to introduce themselves to people, you know, like in my local districts, and a man knocks on my door, I go, I don't want to hear your talking points. What I want to know, and I look him in the eyes, I go, why are you involved in politics? Why are you here? What drives you? Why did you get involved? Because to me, knowing who your enemies are, I had a friend of mine, a mentor in my life. The guy was, you know, had a terrible childhood, alcoholic father, became almost a billionaire, and he was a mentor in my life. And I remember him saying one time in an environment where I had an opportunity to sit and listen to him speak, and he said that you will know a man if you really want to know who a man is. Don't let him tell you. It's just like the endorsements. You know, all these people endorsing Romney. You know, well, if you follow his super PAC, when he dropped out in 2008, he formed a super PAC. Well, he funded a bunch of those politicians who endorsed him. That doesn't tell me who he is, who these people are, who Romney is. It just tells me he's got a bunch of paid-off freaking voice boxes.
Right.
But I want to know, if you really want to know who a guy is, look at who's attacking him. It's same with Newt Gingrich. He has enough career that you can see who...
Mm-hmm.
doesn't want him in power. Ron Paul, who doesn't want him in power? It's a lot of the same people, because, you know, because they care about rule of law and the Constitution. And Newt was had a big 6-year study on going after the judicial branch,
right,
and this legislating from the branch. He's threatened a lot of people with his mindset, that reform mentality that he brought to the House in 94. And so to me, it's I don't care who your friends are. I want to know who your enemies are. And I want to know what drives you, what makes you do what you do. You know, it one of the things I always try to do, and John, you understand the background behind this thinking, is tell me your story, your journey.
Right.
How did you end up how did you end up being this person? What drove you? What decisions did you make for your life? Because if we don't start studying character and what a man's vision is and what drives them in life, what are their core values and things like that, you know, look at the mess this damn country's in because of the people that we hire.
That's the word right there that you brought up, Chris, character. Character is what's lacking. When was the last time a politician of note, other than Ron Paul, had character as a valuable asset? None of
right.
And that's,
yeah,
that's,
character
that's
and principles,
exactly.
Right. Held
yeah.
on to principles.
Exactly. And that goes back to the idea that, Robert, you were talking about with the hero worship. The biggest problem with that is it's like when your dad, the first time your dad can't beat up the biggest guy on the block. Well, my dad can't beat up the guy now. Who am I going to go to? Well, wait a second. What does the person stand for in the sense that does he have to beat the guy up? Or can he do something different that you hadn't thought about? And so when people started to focus on the hero worship instead of the, because if someone looked at Ron Paul, really looked at him, he says everything. In 1971, I am not the message. I am the messenger. So for anyone to hold him up as the hero, he's not. He's always said that for 30 years, in addition to other things, but he's been saying that for 30 years. He's not the politician. He's not the rock star. He is the source for us to benefit and build ourselves.
And I think one thing I like to – I'm going to chime in about on that is I think that's a reason why a lot of your, let's say, for instance – I was a big Newt Gingrich supporter, and to the very end of course until the convention. But then of course there was a lot of Newt Gingrich supporters who, oh, I would never vote for Romney, I'd never get behind Romney, I'd never support Romney. However, now they're saying, okay, we got to support Romney because Newt said this is what Newt said. We're just following what Newt Gingrich says. And I think it's going on with what you said about the hero worship, more about the hero worship, is that they're saying, oh, well, Newt Gingrich said this, so this is what we're going to do. Now, the folks of us who were and still are in many ways Newt Gingrich supporters and like Newt Gingrich, like myself, is say, look, Newt Gingrich has gone down a – and this is where I think where the hero worship, they're still hanging on to the hero worship when it's more about principles for the people who are not. Because
yes.
We're saying, look, Newt Gingrich has gone down a path that we can no longer follow. Okay,
right.
I still like Newt Gingrich. I still support Newt Gingrich, but we have to go down a different path to what it is because he's not following the principles that I'm still adhering to. He's gone off somewhere else.
And that's what Chris was bringing up when he was talking about knowing the man, because if you follow the man's political principles, that's not the same as following his personal choices. And that's the thing that, I mean, it's like
ooh, that
again,
was
go
good.
Back to what Mother said.
That
if they
really
jumped
good.
Off the roof, would you jump off the roof too? No. I'm following the man because of political principle. And
right.
if those personal choices, that's him. And I think that's where Ron Paul really has gotten a lot of people confused when he keeps putting the burden of responsibility back on the individual listening to him. Because they want to put the burden of responsibility on his shoulders for passing laws, as opposed to saying, "No, I want to have the responsibility for motivating the lawmakers," and that's where they get confused about what his message
I've seen
really
that.
Was.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've seen that
was,
with the John. Everybody's like, Ron Paul needs to endorse Gary Johnson. Ron Paul needs to tell me who to vote for. No,
right.
You need to
no.
go. go do the research,
investigate
the candidate, investigate the party, and vote your conscience.
And that's
somebody else tell you who to vote for.
And I think that's the mistake a lot of Newt Gingrich supporters are doing. You know, they're saying, oh, well, you know, Newt Gingrich said, hey, you know, we need to get behind Romney. We need to get behind Romney.
Got to get Obama out was the drive.
Right. You know.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I'm – the challenge that we're faced with now with the write-in campaign here in California is the awareness that what are you really trying to achieve? If you're trying to further your cause, what will – the phrase I always work with that just drives people crazy is a very simple one. What will it take? And I will continue that phrase until I get to my desired result. So if I ask the person, they want to get Obama out of the White House, and I ask them, what will it take? Well, it takes for somebody else to get more electoral votes. Great. What will it take to get more electoral votes? Well, we got to have the voters. What will it take to get the voters? And it will always work back to the common goal is to achieve individual achievements. That means the Republicans want to have an impact on Romney and his campaign and get out Obama, they should vote for Ron Paul in California. If the Libertarians or the minority party say, we want to have a higher position, an elevated position in the political debate, you better win 55 electoral votes, and that will give you that position. Vote for Ron Paul. And then, of course, you've got the Ron Paul people who say, I want to vote for Ron Paul because he did so much to help me educate myself, and I want to celebrate all the work he did. Great. Vote for Ron Paul. And that's the whole point of where if they really looked and thought for themselves, saying, this is what I feel I need to do for my cause, there's no reason not to vote for Ron Paul in California.
Yep, that's a good. I want to say I don't want to use this word, but that's a good argument, you know, for that position.
That's rang true for the folks who are saying, you know, strategy of you know the stop 270. It's like, look, if you are a Republican, for instance, and you are in a blue state that just has no chance of Romney winning, well then. You know, vote for a third-party candidate, whether it be a Ron Paul Ryden or a Virgil Goode or a Gary Johnson, you know, because – and then if you want the – what some are calling liberty parties or grassroots parties or, as I call them, the we the people parties is, you know, if you want them to be able to get more influence and you're in a state that, you know, is not going to go towards, you know, towards Romney, it's definitely going to vote Obama – then you vote for the other candidates. Now, on the flip side, if you're in a state where you want a Liberty Party to win, then you, or at least, you know, show, you know, get some more influence, is to, not instead of voting for Obama, vote for someone such as a Jill Stein or a Rocky Anderson or someone of that nature.
I'm glad you really made me think, go back about, again, part of the strategy and I say it gets convoluted sometimes, and I run on sometimes. But the mindset, that's exactly the mindset that I had because I looked at Chris hasn't told you, but I was born in Texas and grew up just south of San Antonio where the Alamo is. And we are raised from childhood to accept and embrace overwhelming odds as a mark of true manhood and celebrity. Because of the Alamo. As I mentioned to Chris, it depends on how old you are that you want to say there's 150 in the Alamo and 12,000 or 20,000 or 40,000 Mexican soldiers attacking them. It doesn't matter. There was more than 150 people attacking them. But the point being, when I looked at what was happening, I'm going, okay, I've lived here 20 years in California, and it's been no way I can say it other than it's been hell politically because I mean we got Pelosi, we've got Feinstein, we got Boxer, we got Obama, we got all these Democrats, and that's not even counting the state. There is the state is all Democrat for all intents and purposes. So what I said was there's a great quote from A Lion in Winter where the sons of Richard are in the dungeon, and he's coming down to kill them because he thinks they're going to take over and kill him. So they got the sons down there, and one of them is Anthony Hopkins is the character, but I mean the actor. But he pulls out this little dagger that's about 6 inches long, and his brother turns to him and he says, "They're sending 30 soldiers down to kill us, and you're pulling out your dagger." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "You're really a fool." He goes, "No. When the only thing left is the fall, how you take it matters." And so I said to myself, Obama, everybody has given Obama California. Why? I don't know, because I didn't give it to him. So I said, okay, we can't lose California because it was never there to win. So I said, okay, if there's nothing to lose, how I take this fall is going to matter. That's why when I go into this thing, I did not go into it, and I've had people say to me, you know, are you going to make a statement because Ron Paul can't win? I go, duh. Romney can't win. That's why he's not advertising here. So I said, but I go into it differently. I did not go in to make a statement. I didn't go in to spread the word. If I hear that phrase one more time, I want to smack somebody. I don't want to spread the word. I want to get people to act on principle. Get
right,
up,
right.
Go vote, go do something, but do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I said was, I'm in this thing not to make a statement. The statement's already been made. What I'm in here to do is to win. And my objective was to win, first getting Ron Paul on as a certified write-in candidate, then to have winning as the ultimate goal, which means if I look at winning, the only way that this can win is if everybody coalesces. So I have to look at the benefits that each other different disparate voting blocks can gain. And that's why I did this. And so if they're mature enough to say they can reach their goals by doing this, then we'll do it. If they're not mature enough, then there's no way to control immature children in a classroom.
And
that's how I feel about it.
You mentioned a quote from a movie, and there's a movie you know, if I watched many times that there's a quote in that kind of reminds me of it's an Alexander the Great. I think it's the most recent Alexander the Great movie, and Alexander is, you know, talking to one of his men or one of the companions or what have you. He says, you know, we all come to the end of our time. The only thing that matters is what we've done.
Yeah.
You know, so you mentioned that quote. So I really like that quote as well.
Very good. And that's the thing that when people are saying certain things that are ambiguous, I do not deal with ambiguity at all because it's ambiguous.
That was really profound. That was really profound.
That was profound, I know. But yeah. The point being is if someone's into something, why are they in it? Just another phrase I'm really tired of hearing is, well, the long-term process for this change. No, this is not long-term. We got 5 days, people.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever statement we're going to make, whatever action we're going to take, has got to be done now. And that's why when I talk to people, I've actually started telling people, forget ideology. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what Gary Johnson's differences are between him and Virgil Goode or Jill Stein or Ron Paul. It doesn't matter. They've already been established. No one's going to change anybody's mind. That's not going to happen.
Right.
And no one's going to change anybody's mind about Romney. So I'm not going to try to do that. I'm going to say, you want to vote for Romney, but you want your vote to count for Romney now. And I'm putting them in the same position that minority parties have been in forever. And that is, your vote doesn't count. Are you still going to vote?
That's right.
And
to see
the look on a Romney or any major party's supporter's face when you tell them your vote won't count. Forget about manipulation and all the other stuff. I'm just talking about your vote will not count because it doesn't matter. And all of a sudden, all the dues-paying members of the Republican Party are sitting there scratching their head and going, really? Yeah. Welcome to the club.
Mm-hmm.
And now, here is a way out. Are you strong enough to take the way out, or do you want to sit there and be trampled by the tyranny that's going to happen because you did not act accordingly? And
you know, let me add this. That's an interesting perspective or view on that, because in my state, Oregon, California, you know, the true blue states, your vote doesn't count. So what in the hell are you even going to the polls for? They've already given up. Romney hasn't even wasted any time here on you loyal Republicans. Vote for somebody else. Make that
make
that statement. Get those numbers up there. See, I've had this strategy from day one. You have a specific strategy on a state, and we're looking across the country, you know, with what we've been doing. And one of the things that I've said from day one is if we log, even if you log 10%, if you log 15, 20, 25% in everything from Ron Paul to, you know, to all the third parties added up, it changes the politics in this country because it shows that people are fed up and they're willing to go in there and not vote for the status quo. You want to change the future, then change your vote and make it count. And in reality, the only vote that doesn't count is a vote for Romney in a losing state. If you vote for anybody else, whoever that person, you know, whether it's Ron Paul or whoever, you are actually making your vote count. And this is what the RNC fears the most, and the DNC, is that we're going to log 15-20% across this country. They don't fear a loss. They fear numbers. Go ahead, sorry.
And I think another thing that's a wasted vote, one, of course, if you don't waste it all, but two, is if you vote for someone you really don't believe in.
The reason I think it
must be said, because I mean, I don't know how many times, you know, when I don't say it, you know, publicly on who I'm going to vote for, but privately, you know, amongst friends and family, you know, I've made it known who, you know, I plan on supporting, who I plan on voting for. And I will say this, it's not Romney and it's not Obama, you know, and I over and over again, well, you're just wasting your vote. Well, I'm like, well, how so? Oh, well, that, you know, that person can never win. Well, you know, if enough people believe and act, as you said, John, act on, well, that person could win if enough people vote for him. If enough people vote for the person they believe in.
That's the thing I always say. Well, if he gets enough vote, he wins. And the other one that I like that I really – on the note of action, I want to go back to my other point, but on the note of action, I'm older than you guys. I've been around. And so as a result, I was telling – I don't know if I mentioned this to Chris or not, but my last really exciting moment in politics was for Bobby Kennedy. That's 1968. When that came apart –
Oh, you must be older than me.
Yeah. When that came apart, we won't go there. When that came apart because of the events that happened. Again, remember I was talking about how I was raised, looking at the man, the teachers and the advisors and the money. We all knew the crooks that the Kennedy family was. However, at that moment in time, that was the right thing for me to do. Well, that fell apart. I, for all intents and purposes, stopped becoming actively involved in politics because it was just – I was in a funk. I didn't like it. And then I started looking at all the stuff that was coming up, whether it was Reagan, whether it was Nixon. It didn't matter. All these things started happening. And then meeting Ron Paul, sitting down and talking with him for a little bit and reading his stuff and, again, causing me to go back 40 years to – reread the Constitution, reread the Declaration of Independence, reread a lot of things that I had put into the background, and literally go back into my closet, pull out the books, blow off the dust, and actually say, gee, this is still pertinent. Why? Because it's the Constitution. It's not something that's going to change. And so that's when I started getting really involved with that. And when someone says, and this goes back to the point, when someone says, gee, are you going to vote for him? He's not going to win. I just tell them, or I'm sorry, the other one was, if you vote for Ron Paul, that's a vote for Obama. And I tell them, no, if I vote for Ron Paul, that's a vote for Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Then
that's not
exactly.
Like,
what you get about that.
Like, that's exactly what Rex says over and over. You know, that's a second Rex show. A couple of our buddies that are have a show on right now. You know, that's the thing, and I actually have a quote for you guys, sorry.
There you go, Chris.
Always vote for principle, though you may vote alone. You may cherish the sweetest reflection that your vote is never lost. John
Quincy Adams.
Quincy Adams,
yep. J. John Quincy Adams. That's, I also have that one. Thank you. And that's,
I mean, it is amazing to me. You know what these people remind me of? The tone of the things that I see on the internet and the Facebook sites. You know, this, the, what I call the suppression and the coercion, forcing people into that pigeonhole to vote for Romney, is the same thing when I see my Christian friends pull a scripture out to use it to make an argument, when anybody who understands or has ever read the Bible or studied it knows that a single scripture without reference or cross-reference in New and Old Testament is not the way you're supposed to quote scripture. So it's that same thing that I can go to a founding father and find a quote that makes one argument, or we can go to the Constitution. But the bottom line is without those Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers, you have to look at the intent of what they were dealing with at the time and what was going on in their minds and why they made that quote why the Constitution reads that way, because it's so much of it is, what is your intent? And I do not believe they did what they did in this country so I could vote for some man who wants to be king of the world and violates everything I believe in. And I don't believe our founding fathers, if they were sitting here today, would tell me to vote for Mitt Romney, because somebody else told me we have to.
Go ahead. You're the guest, John. Go ahead, and then I'll go with
this quote. I didn't want to lose this particular thought, because this is the funny part regarding how this thing really came about. That quote, Chris, that's why I knew who it was, that quote is what I looked at on my birthday, September 10th.
Interesting.
Which is a real bummer for obvious reasons. But anyway, September 10th was my birthday, and I read that quote. And I said, you know, if I had my druthers, someone asked me, what would you want for your birthday? And I said to them, I want to be able to vote for Ron Paul and Andrew Napolitano and have that vote counted as a statement of my commitment to myself and the exercising my constitutional right of casting a vote and being protected by that. They said, good luck with that. And I sat down and I got to thinking about it, and the rest is now history, but that's what prompted me. I said, enough is enough. It's my fault and my generation's fault that we are where we are. It's my fault because I'm older than you, and I should have been more involved, in my mind. And that self-recrimination is always great, but that's where I was focused, and that's what prompted me to say, for me, so I can sleep well at night, I am going to act on this. So for a whole month, there was only two electors on file for Ron Paul and Andrew Napolitano with the Secretary of State's office, and that was mine and my wife, because it was my birthday present and no one else cared. In fact, the Secretary of State's office, every time I called up thinking, okay, we're going to have a big role here, she says, John, you don't even have enough friends to carry your coffin. And I went, well, thank you for that note.
And actually, the quote I got came from a gift that I received on Father's Day from my daughter. It was this coaster, I guess. Not a coaster, it's something you put your drink in. And you might be familiar with this quote. And it's from, I'll tell who it is afterwards.
Okay.
It says, a man's country is not a certain area of land, of mountains, rivers, and woods, but it is a principle. And patriotism is loyalty to that principle. And that was George William Curtis, who was one of the founders of the Republican Party. And he left the Republican Party after his disagreement on who ended up being one of their – or who ended up being the nominee – for the party for a general election. And the reason why that, you know, kind of hits home for me is that if one of the founders of the Republican Party can leave the party because he believed they were moving away from their principles and supporting, you know, a certain nominee for their party, and if he can leave the party for that, so can I. because I was a staunch Republican since I was, 18. And even when I was younger, since we're all older, you guys here, and probably remember that show called Family Ties. And there's that guy, Alex Keaton, who Michael J. Fox played. We know the little, he had liberal parents, but he was like the Republican of the family. Of course, I didn't have liberal parents. My parents were Republican as well. My dad was actually a Reagan Democrat. So I laugh. I said, and then people say, I didn't leave the party. The party left us, because I always thought the Republican Party was the party of principle. And after this primary, after see what they've done to Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich, in this election to try to what I call coronate Mitt Romney, then I found that I could no longer support the Republican Party anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way we were given a word picture or just an image of the two parties, the Republican Party was always dad and the Democratic Party was always mom. The strength of character, again, growing up in South Texas where the strength of manhood is held in high esteem, we looked up to the father and we went to the mother for coddling. And that was the accepted way of doing it. When you look at how things have now melded together, that there is no difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's really indicative of how the society has allowed all – it goes back to the concept of participation ribbons, saying that if you show up, you get the reward. And that's the melding of no effort but total reward. So you get the admiration of dad by showing up and being with mom. And that doesn't work, because there's no sense of achievement if you show up and they give you that achievement. You have no value. I mean, it has no value. So now the principles of governing oneself, they don't know how to do it. And they mean the young folks that are looking for that leadership that isn't there. They've got, like you just said, Robert, the corporate manipulated individuals that the party has now moved to a different neighborhood, and it doesn't include the majority of people in the United States.
A book that every person should be forced to read in school and study is John Maxwell's Developing the Leader Within.
Great book.
Yeah. In other words, you have to have personal victory through, trial and error, sacrifice, blood, sweat, and tears, delayed gratification, effort, learning how to counsel. One of the things that Americans, and John, you and I can relate to this in ventures that we've had in our lives, but one of the number one most tragic thing I've seen as in Americans is we are so independent, we don't know how to counsel and learn from people who have what we want. And I'm not saying what we want in terms of money. It could be anything. It could be marriage. It could be spiritual life. It could be character. It could be work ethic. It could be, whatever it is. The hardest thing for Americans to do is saying, I don't know. You have more in this area than I do. So help me. Teach me. They don't know how to ask the right questions. Americans are also typically how people. How did you do that? How did you do this? How did you achieve this? Instead of asking the key fundamental questions or the why questions that are the character, the vision, the purpose in life, the questions, or purpose-driven life. There's another book I'm thinking of. It's missing. And I find that, I find in building my Facebook group, in my experience in building organizations in my life, one of the reasons I kept it small was because I wasn't looking for a following. I was looking to find people who thought like I thought, who could take the amount of information that I'm able to deliver, which, you just got on my group today and got to messing around looking in my files and stuff. That's one of my strengths. And so I know that in an organization, but that information is worthless if I can't find people who will duplicate that information, take it out, and start moving with it, learn from me, and pass it around so we can change
the next generation of voters, you know, from this point forward. Because like we say, you know, November 7th is coming. Regardless of what happens, November 7th is going to arrive, and we still have a country to save. And the question is, how are we going to do that? What are the next two key elements, 2014, 2016? Go ahead.
And you say something very interesting, Chris, about the next generation. You know, last night, of course, was Halloween. So I took the night off from the show due to the Halloween festivities, my favorite holiday. And, you know, so, but last night I was out, you know, came back from trick-or-treating with my daughter and her friend. And her daughter obviously has been listening to her family talk about politics. And, you know, she's 10 years old. And she's telling me how she's like, oh, yeah, she goes, everybody's going to be voting for Romney. She's like, you know, it's like, she's like, what are you going to vote for? And I said, oh, I'm voting for, Bob, you know. And she's like, oh, well, he's going to vote for Romney, too.
That's good.
I just had to laugh. You know, she's a little 10-year-old girl. I mean, as I said, it's obvious she's listened to her, you know, her parents and what have you. But, I mean, I find it interesting. I mean, actually, that's the age I was when I first started getting into politics and being interested in politics. Is I remember hearing my dad really railing against Carter. And as I said, he was a Democrat up until Ronald Reagan. And so my dad could not stand Carter. And then I just start listening and hearing about politics from there. But when they're, you know, you guys are talking about the next generation, I mean, it's already starting, even with this kids as young as 10 years old, where they're really starting to, you know, get impressions of, you know, what their political outlook is going to be, even at those young ages. And then when you go in school, as you mentioned this, Chris, what you and I were talking in a conversation where I was telling you a project I was working on with my daughter for school. She's in the fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, right. Well, what does that have to do with the Constitution? Which it had absolutely nothing to do with the Constitution.
Or anything like that.
And actually, truth be, I mean, she goes to a private school right now, but truth be told, I'm thinking about having her homeschooled next year. I'm considering it. So, you know, I mean, I've heard a lot of good things about homeschool children. I think that the curriculum, I think, would be better than what she's even finding in a private school.
Well, yeah, we did it for a while.
On the impressions, one of the things that I really have great conflict and serious discussions with my sister, who is older than I am, and I'll be the first one to say it, she has the mindset, and this is great that she has this mindset, because it causes me to reevaluate my positions and also substantiate them, because she's a very staunch
right.
Obama supporter. She's also a community activist. So when I saw what was happening as far as Obama coming in from the beginning, I already knew when people were downplaying or making fun of being a community organizer, they missed the boat there, because
the
mindset of a community organizer is us against them. They have to have that mindset, because they're always trying to get something without producing anything. You don't produce something from a grant for any kind of social services. You just give the money out. There's no productivity there to give value to the money you gave them. So, therefore, that's the mindset. And it's a devastating mindset when given the keys to the bank. And so, but in discussions with her, one thing I found.
Or the whole political philosophy.
Oh, yeah, it really does. And and that's why I'm saying people were so enamored by saying he's just the community organizer. I'm going, oh. But in any case, what I was going to say was that our generation, the baby boomers, for some unknown reason, 80% of us chose to be friends with their children.
Oh,
I was raised with a parent. They were not my friend. Trust me, they were not my friend. Anytime a parent says to you, you can have the strength of your convictions, but you will accept the consequences of your actions, that may mean the back of my hand, because that's the reaction I got from what you just did. And that's the consequence.
I've gotten
But yeah,
of course, you get in trouble. A parent can get in trouble now for doing that.
Oh, sure, sure. Because everybody wanted to be friends. 80% of the people wanted to be friends. We started having kids that wanted to talk, call their mom and dad Bob and Carol. No, it was Mr. Finnegan. It was Mrs. Finnegan. It was yes, sir, or yes, ma'am. It was never, hi, Bob. No.
Right.
In fact, we had to ask
let my kids raise themselves, and they'll figure out what's right and wrong. That was
exactly.
Wasn't Freud just a wonderful guy?
And so now we have 46% of the grandparents raising their grandchildren. Why? Because you've got